All right. Welcome, everyone. Joe and Mike and Matt back again, buildassetsonline.com. Another student interview. You know, usually we bring on students when they've either sold a store or they've done something, I don't want to say like massively huge, but in this case, we wanted to bring Matt on. He's in the very early stages of his store, but he came from one of the biggest, another high ticket dropshipping course. There's, you know, a bunch of them out there now. I think he came from probably one of the biggest ones, and he wasn't doing too well. Came to our course, and he's now really on the path to making what I would call a successful, sellable, profitable online asset. Does that about sum it up correct?
That sounds about right, man. I'm excited to be here. Thank you guys for having me on.
Yeah, man. Glad to have you. So I guess let's jump right into it. So, you know, I remember the day that you came into one of our live streams. I don't know what live stream it was, but I do remember you hopping in. You were all hyped. You made like a $5,000 sale and you were asking us a bunch of questions.
Yeah.
And it basically ended with, listen, just get inside of our course and then we could actually help you. So why don't you walk us through, you know, your background, what led you to that, and how you got here?
For sure. So yeah, I was a college dropout. 1 year in college, didn't really like it. Then I went to some other type of courses and then wound up in a high ticket dropshipping course. So that's where I ended up, the other initial first course. That went well. I mean, it got me started, but I was lucky enough to make some big sale. It was 11K actually, Mike, and the profit was like 4K. So after that, you know, I was all stoked. I like went crazy, you know, tried spending a bunch of money. And then the next 30 days, I did not get a sale. So I knew that I needed some mentorship, you know, comparing the two packages between you guys and the other course options. It was just night and day. So here I am.
So I want to rewind a little bit. You said you were a college dropout.
Yep.
And,
we,
and you're from Chicago, right?
Yep. Suburbs.
Okay. So you've taken big inspiration from Kanye West. But that's so right. What kind of influenced that decision? I want to get into that a little bit because I'm sure you've heard Joe and I expound a little bit about college and our feelings about it. But what were your feelings and what made you want to leave?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I have nothing against college. People need college. But for me, I just didn't really know exactly what I would do or what was propelling me to go to college. So it just felt kind of unwise to just, you know, continue going deeper and deeper into debt without, you know, something in mind at least to like have a goal. Like there was no end goal. It was just going to college. So, I mean, I think the moment that allowed me to get out of college is I found another course. It was kind of related to one of the classes I had in college. It was like a full blown digital marketing program. It taught you like everything from email marketing to Google ads to SEO, everything you need to know about digital marketing. So that was nice. That was like what I did after my first year, but, that kind of felt still like college because it's just knowledge, right? But there's
You weren't doing anything with that. You were just like
learning. Was that through? I'm just curious. Was that through like Digital Marketer or something?
The company's called Simply Learn. You probably have never heard of it. It's super interesting. I mean, I learned like way more information than I would ever need. Like, I actually got a very good foundation for like the actual digital landscape, I think. But it doesn't leave you with a model. It doesn't leave you with anything to actually apply that knowledge to. So that's kind of how I got into all the YouTube stuff, you know, sifting through the business models. And then I found a, you know, high ticket one that actually made sense. And now we're here. So.
Cool. Yeah. That is like a big problem, right? Like you watch, even with college, right? You take a course, maybe you learn something, but it's all about application. And even with dropshipping or with SEO, especially, it's not so much about like what is dropshipping and all these things is how you package it into like an actionable model.
Right.
So yeah, you're kind of right. And that's a big focus for us is like, how do we take these tools and put them into a successful model? So exactly. Yeah, I mean, so you joined that other course and then kind of what happened from there? Did you have, was that big sale, like your first sale or how long were you going with that?
So let's see. I think I joined January 4th or so, like just beginning of the year, like very start of the year. And then I kind of like put some time and effort into researching niches, building the site. And one mistake I made probably was like, I got like 10 brands on board before launching ads. So I got the course in early January and then launched ads in the middle of March. So like two and a half months from buying the course to having a site. And then that big sale came in the middle of April.
Okay. So,
this is about 3 months. Yeah.
So,
and then go ahead. I was going to say after that sale, I didn't get another sale until I joined you guys' course. So.
Yeah. I was like, it's just funny. Like the natural progression that you went through was kind of, I don't know. I feel like the way that me and Joe went about things, it took us years to kind of get to the point that you went to. I mean, we graduated college and stuff, but it's interesting how you realized you were getting into a bad debt situation with college. And then you started looking into like digital marketing, and then you realized, hey, I need an actionable course. Right. So did you have any, like, what do you feel like drove you down that path? Was it getting ads on Instagram or something? Like, how'd you even know that all these things existed?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. You know, at the end of the day, I really don't know. I mean, the stuff went how it went, but I mean, things added up with like the pandemic, you know, starting to get into Instagram with my boys, shout out if you're watching, just kind of being on that market, like where people are marketing, like on YouTube, basically where all these people are spamming their course, join my, you know, all right. this stuff. So, I mean, that helped, or not helped, I guess, but that influenced for sure. And then, you know, just making the actual big decision to not pursue the education that didn't really seem applicable, I guess.
Well, I think it does help because people nowadays, mostly kids, I guess, are being introduced and led down this funnel, if you will, of like, true. You're interested in making money online. You're automatically pixeled in the Facebook, Instagram machine. You're pixeled in Google. And now these people can target you. Like when we were getting into to doing this, that didn't exist. So it was kind of on us to seek out the knowledge. And of course, I think both things can lead you down kind of shitty paths. For us, it was like we'd go on the Warrior Forum, if you know what that is. And we'd like just see these different courses people were selling and be like, all right, like I guess we're going to do this.
And we would buy it. Well, I guess the good thing about that more so back in the old days is it was less professional, I'd say. There weren't like these carefully crafted funnels that were going to, you know, get you to do something. It was just,
right.
You know, it was a little bit like, you know, like word of mouth as well. You know, YouTube wasn't even that big. Like a lot of the courses we bought, like didn't even have YouTube channels or big YouTube presences or podcasts or something like that. It was just, I don't even remember it exactly how it worked, but
yeah, it makes sense why it would, I mean, explode. I mean, it's kind of like that whole audience of younger people is on YouTube now. So, I mean, I guess I was one of them.
Yeah. I do want to take a moment. We got 18 people in here. We only got 2 chats. We only got like 4 likes. So please hit the like button, leave a comment. If you're here, if you're listening in, helps the algorithm. It helps more people, you know, find us because we're not on Instagram doing the ads with Lambo yet.
Next week
we might ride the Lambo.
Oh man, get them
and,
McLaren.
And you know, because we got to start competing, we got to start getting in the big leagues, targeting the Zoomers, and you know that's our thing, Joe. That's our problem. I feel like we're just sitting here taking it easy. You're in a different room this time. See, that should show something.
Ah, no bed.
He's living more than just a one bedroom. I can't say the same for myself. So, you know, we're doing our thing, but we're doing our thing very slowly. So how was it? What the hell? How was it that you even found us, right? So you were doing this other course, you made a big sale, and then all of a sudden you wound up in one of our streams. Do you remember?
Yeah, I'll be honest, actually. I mean, I was comparing both of you guys before I actually made a purchase. And they had a cheaper option. I went cheap. Realized that this, I mean, it's an investment. So on the back end, I wasn't scared to put the money where my mouth was, but I was comparing both of you guys because I think the first course hit me with some like webinar. I joined that. took all the notes I could. I was going to like try and do it without the course, but I knew that I just wanted to get it fast. So bought the course, just coughed up the money, and then I knew I needed to execute it. So once I executed it, I knew that you guys had a better deal for the mentorship, and it just was like a more personal package, I guess. So, I mean, I knew it was going to be worth it. So,
yeah.
But yeah, I was comparing both initially. So, I mean, I just went with that. I was like, all right, if it sucks, I'll just buy theirs, and then I'll still be in the same position.
Yeah.
So I want to know a little bit about, let's talk about the current status of your store. So we kind of got to where it was at before you got in with us. You made that one sale and then not another sale. But then once you joined us, so like I was mentioning earlier in the episode, your sales numbers are not like, you know, you just had a month, I believe it was $27,000 or $30,000 or something, right?
Yeah, 32 last month.
Yeah. So we're not talking huge, huge sales numbers, which, you know, for guess, I guess if you, I think it's pretty nice. You know, what was your profit on that?
For sure. 46.50, I think.
So after ad spend, you made 46.50.
Net. Yep. Net. Right. Everything.
So, I mean, that's nothing to sneeze at. You know, I'm sick of seeing these screenshots that are $100,000 or, you know,
right,
even art screenshots that are, you know, however much they are, you know, to me, when I hear those numbers, I'm proud of you for running a super lean and super efficient operation.
Yeah.
Because we, you know, people will sometimes, they'll have huge sales numbers, but their ad spend will be terrible. They'll be spending it all on a team to handle these orders that are unprofitable. So in my opinion, you're, even though you're, you know, the revenue number isn't some massive thing, you're really doing it the right way.
I agree for sure.
What was your ad spend?
So I kind of scaled back. Interesting to see the progression that I've made, like making it more profitable. I've been scaling back since I came from the last course. Last month in September, I spent like $850.
Right. So yeah, I remember I was looking at your account. I was kind of freaking out a little bit because it was very good. It was a very good return on ad spend.
Yeah.
And you've heard me say this, typically we like to see at least a 10x return on ad spend. So if you're spending $800 in ads, you know, if you're somewhere in the $8,000, $9,000 revenue range, that's like adequate.
Right.
But you're hitting something like, you know, more than 30, which is really, really good. And to me, that indicates you're primed to scale because you have a lot of room. You know, it's not like you're just barely breaking even with your ads, right? Your ads are very, very profitable. But I think I gave you a piece of advice that was a little contrary to that, where I said, hey, how about you don't scale for a little bit? And it kind of goes along with what Joe said. Like in our businesses and, you know, just seeing what's worked over the years, people want to take like the first inkling of success and just scale it to the moon. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that's not the best scenario. Sometimes you want to let that really high ROI be a high ROI for a few months and enjoy that. So
definitely.
Has that been the case this month too?
Yeah, pretty close. Very similar, I would say. Ad spend's a little higher. I just spent a little more generous on a couple of my brands, but I mean, I'm fine with that. It's massive profits. So
yeah.
And the month's not over. So
it's true. And one of the cool things about your business, I mean, number one, I'll say for you to get that high of a return on ad spend in the niche that you're in, I think is a testament to your hard work, but it's also, I'll toot my own horn a little bit, a testament to what goes on inside the Bao universe.
That's right.
Shout out Nick Morrow with the Bao Boys. Because listen, you are in, I'd say, one of the most competitive dropshipping industries.
You're telling me.
You know. I mean, you said you got that one sale, you didn't get another sale for a month, and you were spending more than you're spending now.
Yep.
So
way more.
What do you feel like the difference was from then to now in terms of the actual actionable things you did?
Actionable things I did. I kind of changed where the spend was going. I mean, you and I know of a few brands that kind of eat your money unless, you know, you get lucky like I did. I mean, it was complete luck getting that 11K sale. So, I mean, trying to scale that brand is just kind of a nightmare. Like you don't know what's going on with that. So actionable things, I guess. I did get a couple more brands, shifted around the spend in the ad account, kind of scaled backwards a little bit. I was spending like $1,500. I think the most I spent in a month was like $1,700, and it brought back like $9K in sales. That was like the one month where I just broke even, no profit. And then also the website, what I made is significantly better. My website before coming here was just trash. Joe had some good tips for me. But yeah, I mean, making the website better, spending in the right areas, and then, I mean, answering the phone is huge. You got to help these customers out.
Right. So you don't have 10 VAs. It's just, it's not a one man show.
Yep, for sure.
Do you list products yourself, or do you have someone kind of helping you with that?
Up to this point, I have done everything myself, but I'm excited to start getting into that stuff. I have some products that I need to upload, and I just don't feel like it. So,
yeah, we were talking about that last week. If you were tuning in, how sometimes that could be a little bit of a detriment if you just outsource product uploading kind of willy nilly instead of actually like taking a look at the products themselves, understanding the products. And I think.
Yeah.
We've suffered from that a little bit. I've seen students kind of just say, hey, I got this brand, upload it all. And they don't even really know what the hell they're selling. So I think, at least like with you, here's the thing. You've done things in a way where your margins are actually really good. Like the suppliers you've gotten and the industry you're in, the margins are actually pretty good. So it's worth it for you to spend more time looking at these products and uploading these products yourself, because you can put in the little details to make them maybe a little bit better than the competition. And
right.
I mean, that's something to talk about too. Do you feel like you've done anything differently to be able to get in front of the competition, or what do you think about that?
Other than ads, I think actually recently, yeah. I mean, I've been doing things on the website to try and like stand out. Not that anyone uses the features or anything like that, but just showing that you have it, that it kind of helps you stand out. So like, writing the some custom, not all, some like just on the best products, some custom descriptions, like actually presenting the product in a way that the customers, which I know like would resonate with, you know, actually having helpful information there, putting some, you know, unique stuff other than just a product on a website with, you know, the checkout button type stuff. So
I'm looking at things, you know, I gotta say, I'm looking at your site now. I love some of the stuff you've done with it. I haven't looked at it probably in a couple of weeks or maybe a month or something.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some stuff you've done with it. Some really nice call to actions you have, especially on your product page.
Mm-hmm.
All the right things stand out. And yeah, I think honestly, some of the stuff we might have to implement, Mike. I feel like there's some stuff that he's doing that we're not really doing.
Yeah,
I'm in the trenches, man.
You are in the trenches, and that's what you need in the beginning. And that's the problem with like these automation offers people try and put out, and just this idea of this turnkey done for you type business, is that it doesn't put you in the trenches.
Yeah.
And unless you've been there and you've had to upload all the products yourself, answer all the phones yourself, do everything yourself, you're never going to get that foundation that you need in order to build the big house, right? Get the big exit. So It's just a necessary phase, and I think people shouldn't skip it. That's just my opinion. But one thing about your store that's also interesting is you get a lot of sales through phone calls.
Yeah, mostly.
And a lot of that is by design. I think a lot of that's a big reason why your ROI or your return on ad spend is higher. So do you want to talk about that a little bit?
That's one of the call to actions Joe's probably talking about. I mean, I'm telling people to call me everywhere on this website I can. So, I mean, just kind of based off the data that I've gotten in the past, like most of my sales, maybe half have been from phone calls, like where they ask you about a product, you answer a few questions, and then you send out a quote and they just go through the checkout process. But that's like kind of something in my industry. I feel like specifically they want to talk to you about it. Like they have questions. So you just got to get them past their questions and then they're willing to buy. So that's definitely been a big part of it. And I answer every phone call no matter where I'm at. So,
yeah. especially higher price point stuff, which is inevitably going to be where the high margin is.
Yeah, for sure.
People are going to want to talk with somebody, and you're the best person. Like, you are, you know, the store owner is going to be the best person most likely to be answering the call, because they really want the sale. It means more to them than somebody else. And you're going to have more expertise than everybody else because you uploaded the products yourself. Exactly. You know, all the suppliers, you interact with them. So that's why I felt like drop shipping, I think in a worst case scenario, is like a really good just sales job where you make your own hours, you choose to answer the phone or not, and it requires no degree, requires no kind of background and skills. And you could do kind of well with it. If you ever listen to our interview with Braden, who bought a couple of our stores, that's kind of how he approaches it. He likes to take big margin calls himself. He has like someone that answers the phone for him, but it's a select item. They'll just transfer it right to him and he'll do it.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that's definitely one of the soft skills that I've definitely developed over the time, like actually closing sales, like definitely know more about sales than I did before. And of course, suppliers too.
What makes something a soft skill versus a hard skill?
I mean, kind of like the things where it's like person to person. I don't know. Like, you can't really teach being a personable person, I guess. Is that a soft skill? I don't know.
I don't know.
I think skill, like, soft
skill is.
Yeah, I think a soft skill is, maybe I'm tweaking, I don't know, but I think a soft skill is like being able to, you know, the things you can't teach, like being able to speak confidently and, you know, all those other things where it's like, all right, I'm not just reading this and then applying it. Like, it's something you have to practice. You can't really teach.
So like installing a toilet is like a hard skill.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay.
It's interesting. So people talk about, people often ask us, do I have to answer the phones? Do I have to do this? Do I have to do that? And we always say the answer is no, not necessarily. Mm. But like Mike said, and this could go for, I think, for any business, is that if you're going to scale to 500,000 a month, 400,000 a month, then you might not want to be answering the phones. But when you're, like Mike said, like, that's just stuff to help you scale. Mm-hmm. It's going to be, if you're answering the phones yourself and you're just getting started, that's going to give you a leg up. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah. And, yeah. You know, and I'm very responsive too. So if they call me first, you know, that's my sale. Like, nobody, they're not going to anyone else. So.
Yeah. And that, you know, you can get by without that. And, you know, if you want, but I'm telling, like, that makes a huge, huge difference.
It's like back to being responsive, because a lot of times people will miss calls and then, you know, the customer will just call the next company.
Exactly.
And so you're kind of getting that trickle down right there. And so it is interesting, but yeah, I mean, we've interviewed some students who never really answered their calls. Like, they outsource kind of right away because of their job situation, and you can make it work. You can make it work, but I think it's a bit tougher because you have to be more on point with your ads. Depending on who you hire, they may not be as advanced with their English level or their ability to sell. Right. So, you know, you got to weigh these things. But if you can be in the trenches, like I said, it's usually going to result in a better foundation. But I want to get to this comment here. Toddy said, this college versus you purpose dilemma has been killing me. So does he mean he's just, hello? Is he trying to decide if he should go to college or not?
I think he is. A college versus your purpose dilemma.
I would say,
go ahead.
I would say, sorry, I would say take purpose out of this whole thing. I mean, unless you actually have a purpose that you feel really strongly about, then you can add it in. But I feel like most people don't. And I think that I feel like all the purposes, like a higher calling career, like being a doctor or something, you have to go to college for that anyway.
Right.
But if it's outside of that, I feel like there's no purpose.
I think that's kind of what he's saying.
Money is my purpose.
Money.
Yeah, I mean,
there you go. Then you don't need college, my boy.
I mean, if you want to become a doctor or, you know, something like that, then, you know, you'll make money, but do you want to go down that path? Right. So, yeah. And it's like, what type of purpose does like a 17-year-old have? People put too much like emphasis on their decisions and choices as a teenager. And it's kind of screwed up. Like that's people as a teenager have to make a decision that's going to put them into hundreds of thousands of dollars of debt.
Yep. Yep.
So quite predatory if you ask me, but hey, if you want to be a doctor, you want to be a lawyer, then, you know, go to college. He says, are you scared about the recession coming since you are relatively new to the dropshipping like Joe and Mike?
No, I'm very excited actually, because, you know, I can shift and go into whatever direction I want. And in this type of a season, I guess you could call it, you got to stack the bread and just put it into those assets. So, I mean, I'm actually very excited for the recession. I think great timing for me.
Well, let me tell you what's going to happen when this recession occur. I don't know what's going on. The definition, I don't know any of that. But say this recession occurs. Let me tell you what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. People like Matt, who are running a lean operation, they're barely spending any money. So their business, it's not going to go underwater. It's going to do very well. What's going to happen is that the competition, who has a lot invested into their infrastructure, isn't that profitable. They're the ones that are going to be going underwater.
Yep.
And we've seen it time and time again. We were talking, Mike and me were talking about this the other day. We mentioned this this company on another, or this website on one of our streams, clockway.com. This is all just speculation. I don't know like what happened with that business, but my guess is that they had too big of a staff, spending too much on ads, probably trying to hit some revenue number, not caring about being profitable. I mean, that's the story about every business today. All these disruptive Silicon Valley things, the profit never matters. And that's what happens when until it does.
Yeah, that's so backwards to me. I mean, you start a business to make money and then you're not making money. You got to like take loans out against your asset. It's just so backwards to me. Cash flow is king.
Well, for people like us, cash flow is king. The problem is business these days is propagated, and it's like, you know, you see these big companies, the Facebooks and the startups or whatever, the way that they're dealing with money through these venture capital companies is totally different. Like they just get money out the ass, and they're just, these venture capital companies are just throwing it every which way till something sticks. Like literally the success rate on these is terrible. Yeah. So you have these companies that have all this money coming in, and then the majority of them fail. And so they're playing with house money anyway, I guess, but it's like people shouldn't look at business that way and think that's how they have to do things. When, I mean, who knows what the future holds, but the way that we've been doing things for the last several years, I mean, you have to be as lean as possible to always be as profitable as possible. And then the opportunities will come to scale or to, you know, buy something else. But I think I've even noticed this in one of our stores, Joe. Like I feel like the last couple months I've had some students message us, and even I've seen a little bit of this myself. Sales have been like slightly down. And so when you have this downturn, whether it's because people don't want to spend that much money, and our stores are still doing very, very fine, but it's just not as high as it usually is. But what I'm seeing is inside of our ad account, our spend went way up, and I haven't like increased bids or anything, which means to me, people are dropping out of their positions, and it's leading us to these higher positions where we're getting more clicks and thus we're spending more. So it's always a give and take, right?
So let me ask you a question on that note, Mike. Mm-hmm. When people are dropping out, that means everyone naturally is going to be either dropping out or lowering their bids. So at the end of the day, that should result in more clicks with less per click, because now you should be able to lower.
Right. Right. If it's the economy's roaring, everybody's bidding out the ass, everybody's trying to scale, costs are going up, whatever, but it's kind of a bubble, or, you know, it's cyclic. So when things scale back down, you have people scaling their advertising costs back down, the clicks go down. And so it's hard to say historically if recessions or, you know, economic downturns are even going to be bad for your dropshipping store, because it's all about cost per conversion at the end of the day with how we do it. And so less competitors or less aggressive competitors means cheaper clicks, means cheaper conversions, means we're still taking it easy.
Right. So, Mike, do you have to go back through all of your ads and lower those bids, or what would be your action plan for that? If you're spending more when your competitors drop out, you got to go and lower your bids?
I'd probably just – I'm just going to keep it.
Yeah, I would too. I like the top spots.
Right, because it's just – if it's still profitable, mm-hmm. then I'll take that. And, yeah, it just leaves me in better position, definitely. I'd say. So, I mean, if it – some things overspend, then obviously you got to scale back on that, but you know, it's a case by case basis, product by product basis.
For sure. For sure.
Tim says, I feel like we should all actually just be working openly about our niches and brands, so we all avoid shitty ones more often rather than everyone running through the same shitty supplier. LOL. IDK. What do you think?
Kind of.
I mean, I feel like getting the supply, like, I don't even know like any sort of large percentage of all the suppliers out there. So I feel like going on your own supplier journey is the way to go.
Right. I mean, the stores are open anyway. Like, they're all online. They're all on Google Shopping. So you can just see everyone's store there. Doesn't matter who owns the store. I don't know.
I mean, not to toot our own horn here, but in past live streams, which we do pretty regularly, I feel like we create some pretty good store concepts live within like an hour.
Right. And that's a big thing about what Matt did. He had a lot of spend going towards suppliers that are just totally, you could say saturated.
Yep.
And he got more suppliers that were in a competitive industry. As a whole, the industry is competitive, but he found some suppliers not everybody was getting. So that's really all it takes. So it doesn't – yeah, I mean, a lot of people wind up with the same supplier, but it doesn't mean you have to, like, put all your spend towards that supplier, or that supplier can't make you sales.
Right, yeah.
Even that $5K profit sale that you got was from a shitty supplier.
Right.
It's just all about how you treat it and how you run the ads.
Completely.
He says all about the bells and whistles, baby. Sure. Yeah. And Jeff said time for the newcomers. It's always time for newcomers. You know, people, it's like the stock market, right? When it's high, you're like, oh, I should have bought. And then it's low, you're like, oh, it's going down. So the best time is always now. And what else can you say? We'll take a quick pause to plug something new we got going on, Joe.
What's that, Mike?
BuildAssetsOnline.com/class. We have a new web class available for the public. What do we do? Do we reveal some of our products in this?
We reveal products that we've sold and basically teach you how to build $1 million in online assets with dropshipping. That is the goal of the class.
Yeah, free web class. See some of our products. People would have killed for this stuff back in the day, Joe.
Yeah.
I was trying to explain before. We used to have to go on the Warrior Forum and skim through these sales letters and figure out if we wanted to do a particular business model. And there was no direction. There was no proof of concept. And, people are going to watch this. They're probably going to be upset. They didn't feel like they got enough value. But listen. I would have sacrificed a newborn
for this. You know what's funny is that so back in the day, everything looked a little like people say, oh, now this is a scam, that's a scam. Back in the day, everything looked like a scam. And it was legitimately like super hard to tell what was a scam.
We legitimately got scammed once.
Yeah, we legitimately got scammed once. It was the craziest thing. We should. I honestly don't remember all the details that well. I'm sure they would come back to me, but
it was kind of about dropshipping too. So I don't want to get too off topic from the interview, but basically we went on the Warrior Forum there was a sales letter about, you know, you can learn how to do drop shipping and it, or something. It was two things, right? Drop shipping or something else. And yeah, I mean, it was going to be like private one-on-one thing. We had to PayPal the guy like $750.
Oh no.
Maybe like seven to 10 people joined this thing. We were all in a Skype group. He was helping us. Oh, it was like a consulting business.
Yeah.
We set up the consulting business, like all the bullshit, like introductory steps. And then he just went ghost. And everyone was like, what the hell? Joe, you filed like a charge back, maybe with credit, your credit card or PayPal. And basically this guy had like run the money through someone else. So we basically took advantage of this one kid. He got the money and then he ran.
What?
Very odd situation just to make $7,000, but yeah.
It was like, it was like one of those Nigerian prince scams or something. Like it was like one of those like crazy things. Yeah, but it was a British guy.
Anyway.
That guy's really in the trenches. Jeez.
Yeah, like, I don't know. I don't know. So what do you – oh, you hit that, Joe?
Yeah. It's an important question. Hi, guys. A question about your packages. If we are two working on the same story, do we need to buy two packages? No. So, I mean, we Mike and I are brothers. We understand this. And we'll add you to the same private Discord channel. It's not a problem.
Two for one. There you go. Buy one, get one free. So, Matt, what do you feel like the next phase is of your journey?
Well, I think there's some work to do with the brands I have. But I think what's coming up next is maybe some more brands. I've been kind of getting creative with what I think I could take the store in terms of brands. And then after that, I mean, I've also been having some success with my SEO lately. So that's exciting. I mean, there's a lot of potential with that. So, I mean, I'll probably be writing some articles, maybe outsourcing some writing. Not sure. But there's some simple next steps I can take that will probably grow the revenue for sure.
What kind of success have you been having with SEO?
I mean, recently, traffic, of course. But also, like, what's more important is the leads. I've had, like, numerous, probably like 4, 5, 6 leads that have come in for products that I'll get like $1,000 in profit on. So, I mean, it's working. They're reading the articles, they're getting to the end, and then they're asking me to use this discount code, which means like they either skip the whole thing or they read it. So, I mean, there's people reading my articles, so it feels good.
So on the articles, are you having a call to action to contact you, or are you just taking them directly to like a product page where they can contact you? How are you working them down the funnel with that?
Yeah. So, I mean, the articles that I write are like different from just the product searches. The articles kind of take them from like a question, answer the question, of course, like the basics of content marketing, answer their questions. And then, you know, they get to the end of the article and it's like, okay, if you've learned something or if you're interested in this product, then hit this link or use this, you know, discount code at checkout. And then, I mean, it's worked. People wanted to use the code, but I unfortunately did not have it activated. So,
oh wow, okay.
Yeah,
that's a good problem, I guess.
And also, I don't know what live chat app you guys use, but if you're looking through the live chat app and you see people on your site, you can see what they came in through. Mm-hmm. And I've been noticing more and more and more people coming in through my blog articles. So, I mean, it's I've never had that work before, so that's a good feeling.
What are you using? Using Tidio or
it's a talk.to.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
T-A-W-K. So. Yeah. We use Tidio and like what's cool about Tidio is the chatbots. I don't know if Talk has this, mm-hmm. but like with Tidio, for example, if someone is landing on a blog page, then you can have a specific bot set up. So they're on like, you know, it'd be your website.com/pages or /blog or whatever it is. So
yeah,
you could say to the bot, all right, if they're on a page that contains /blog, then, you know, after 2 minutes, message them and say, you know, do you need help or something like that?
Yeah, so, you can do that.
Yeah, it's a cool way to be able to work someone kind of at a higher stage down the funnel.
So, yeah, I've been doing some of that. And then also like some Klaviyo stuff. I just recently found out you can target different pages like you were just saying. So I'll have like different pop-ups for different pages because all my brands have different margins and
yeah,
just a little stuff like that can make a big difference, I think.
Cool. So Jeff says, how many visitors a month, Matt?
Total, I mean, I like you looking at the correlation between the traffic and the sales. And I mean, it's very interesting to see. But I mean, my biggest month last month, I think I had like 3,500 traffic total from everything.
How many sales?
Like total or the number of sales?
Yeah, for that month.
I think, I mean, it was 32K, but I think it was like maybe 10 orders. A little over 10 orders.
So it's like 0.3%. Conversion.
Yeah.
Conversion rate, John. What does it mean?
I don't know.
What does it mean? Maybe in a few months, we'll have a big answer to that. But
yeah, we are doing some conversion rate stuff right now. So,
but that's the problem with conversion rate. When you have 10 sales a month, is you can never accurately do something in a way to like, it's very hard to dial in and scientifically increase your conversion rate.
Yeah.
I mean, number one, when you're selling high margin products, your conversion rate is just going to be worse. That's how it is. But on top of that, it's hard to create like statistical significance in this type of page. The page like this gets more orders than the page like this. When you're only getting 10 orders a month, it's very hard to actually optimize. So I think in order to do that, you have to be a huge store. I mean, like for Amazon, conversion rate optimization is hugely important, and they can run significant tests and see in a day because of how much traffic they have and how many orders they have, what makes a difference. So, but listen, it's not the end of the day. It's not the end of the world because you have blog traffic coming in, you got big items, and you only spent friggin' $1,300, whatever, $800,
and your
ad spend is ridiculous. So, conversion rate overrated.
Yeah, I agree.
Millionaire Oasis, I haven't seen him or her in a while. Welcome. If you have a supplier with hundreds of products, what makes the cut in the beginning? $100, $300 minimum profit, and do you just list them and not run ads to them, or just not list them completely?
Hmm.
What would you say, Matt?
He's talking about profit there, right? With the 100, 300?
Minimum profit, yeah.
I mean, that I feel like you will never really know for sure because you don't know how much you're going to spend. But, I mean, there's some products on my store where, I mean, I made a sale this month that I made $8. So it's not really about that. I mean, it's more like where your spend is going. If you're going to spend more money on products that make you less money, that kind of just doesn't make sense to me. So,
right.
I mean, you could list them for sure, but yeah, I think you can put priority on products with the ad spend, not by like listing them or not listing them.
Yep. I say it's well said. Brian, you said, what industry? What do you like about
dropshipping?
e-commerce. So, what else we got going on, Joe?
I don't know. That's about it, really. Talked about his lean operation. Talked about, should we talk about being a Zoomer? Like,
yeah, man, what's up?
The content or what? Just being a Zoomer in general.
Being a Zoomer in general. Like, I mean, it really.
Do you feel more pressure to have your own business and be making money online as a Zoomer?
No, I mean, kind of the opposite. It's still probably the same as you guys, but it's like, it's weird for you not to go to college, or not weird, but it's like, all right, you better have something going for yourself if you're not going to college. Otherwise you look like a bozo because everyone else goes to college. It's just like the social pressure in that aspect, I guess, kind of, but
I thought college was kind of going out of fashion.
I mean, in the content I watch, it is, but just from where I grew up, I guess, or where I was, you know, who I'm friends with. I mean, everyone I know goes to college or they have some job.
But do you find that that Zoomers are either like super optimistic or like super depressed?
Like on either end?
Yeah.
Some, I mean, that's a tough question because I know some of both, but it's also like, they kind of just adopt a mindset and then they don't really want to change it. So they just follow whatever they were programmed with. That's kind of how I see it.
You know what, Joe? I think it's a lot more normal than we suspect. I think there's just more of them online. So it's a bit more skewed. I mean, and also we're skewed by our cousin who's like the biggest Zoomer. Like, I'm surprised you didn't join his course.
I've seen his content. He's got some interesting interesting podcasts.
There you go.
No, I guess it does confuse me because, I mean, you see the internet marketing stuff, mm-hmm. which is, I guess, some of the Zoomer content that I've consumed.
Yeah.
And then you have TikTok and there's stuff that's just so crazy from all different angles. And so, yeah, that's why I asked that question.
Yeah. No, it's a valid question for sure. I mean, there's some crazy, crazy stuff going on. I mean, I hate TikTok, but it's so annoying. I would market on it, but I would never be on TikTok. I hate that app.
Yeah, even doing the marketing to me would be, I don't know. I don't think I'm ready for it.
Yeah, I'm getting
maybe once I get the Lambo.
Another venture that's kind of like on the branding side of things. I'm actually just running the search engine marketing for them, but it is kind of like the branding, kind of a low ticket product type of idea.
Oh, they're paying you?
Oh yeah. Or it's on performance based, but I'm involved with that. So just thought I would test it out.
Cool. Do you have any questions for us? You said you wanted to ask us some questions. So.
I mean, I could go for days. I mean, the land, the blog sites, all the drop shipping sites. I mean, what's on the top of mind? I was going to buy your guys' land course. I'm not going to lie. Like, I was just going to buy it and just hold it until I wanted to do some land. But that's just super interesting to me because I think would you say it's more scalable? Because, I mean, there's infinite land in America. Like, which one would you say you can make more money with, drop shipping or land?
There is finite land. It's certainly
true.
There is certainly finite amount of parcels, but it is
right.
It, intents and purposes, it is very large. You know, there's a lot of pros and cons. I think like someone in your position, mm-hmm. the steady cash flow of drop shipping and the predictability of drop shipping, is just easier to manage.
For sure.
Versus land, yes, it's scalable, but there can be times where I'm going to go to buy a property and there's like an issue with a deed or something. And it just takes me 2 months, 3 months to get a property to be bought. Or that could happen on when we like, you know, we got to wait for it to sell. Sometimes it could take a week. Sometimes it could take a month. Sometimes it takes 6 months. Yeah. So like the way that you are sitting on your money is different. It's not like every month I'm going to make $30,000 in revenue. I'm going to make, you know, between $4,000 and $5,000 profit, and you have that. Yes, you could make a shitload of profit.
Yeah,
and when you look at the ROI of a particular, you know, parcel, it's very good. Mm-hmm. But you don't know exactly when that money is going to hit, or when the money is going to go out.
True.
So, you know, I'd say as someone who's trying to get their footing, trying to build their foundation, I do prefer drop shipping because even with what you're doing. Now you're creating something. If you can keep what you're doing consistent and you make $4,000 to $5,000 profit a month, what are you looking at there? That's almost that's a six-figure asset right there.
Yeah, true.
So there's no other way to build a six-figure asset from the ground other than, I mean, high ticket drop shipping and blogging, really.
Yeah, I agree. It's a great business. I'm just very intrigued by the land because even before this, I've always been into kind of like real estate. I know that's how 90% of millionaires are made. So I just something about real estate is gravitating. But
listen, I like land a lot, but it's you can send out a mailer. You spend $1,000, $2,000, and maybe you screw something up and you don't get any property out of it.
Right. Yeah.
And again, at the end of the day. It's very profitable because even if you buy one property and you make, cost you $2,000 to send that mail, you make $10,000 profit. Nothing to sneeze at. You just made $8,000.
Yeah.
So true. You can just do that every month. But again, for people to be playing with that type of money, it's about, do you have that type of money to expend?
Yeah. I mean, I feel like I made every mistake in the book, really. The five pillars of dishonor. I was breaking all of them and probably more, and I still made some monster sale and $4,000 profit. So
yeah, you can't get that kind of anywhere else. In my opinion. Like with blogging, I think it's a bit of a what percentage of things would you have to do right, Joe, in order to have success with like blogging, SEO?
I mean, I think it's all about how you spend your money at the end of the day. So it would really depend like how you were approaching it. I think that's what I would say.
Well, yeah, I guess that's true. Like if you're doing it for your high ticket store, then you go out, you spend $2,000 on articles. If you screw that up, you're still bound to make profit on that, because even if you get a little bit of traffic to your, yeah, you know, your high ticket products, you sell one, boom, you made your money back. So
I also think so if you compare it to something like low ticket dropshipping using Facebook or TikTok ads, I would say the room for error is like much, it doesn't even compare. Like, I don't know if the room for error is as good as high ticket dropshipping. It's definitely not. Mm-hmm. But if it's like, I'm having like reversed. So what am I saying? If high ticket dropshipping is here in terms of like room for error, I would say the blogging stuff is here, but then Facebook ads and TikTok ads, all that kind of stuff is all the way at the other end of the spectrum. That's the best way to put it, I'd say.
Yeah, there are way, way more variables. It's actually crazy. Kind of seeing a little bit of both, like it is wild how many more variables there are, because the whole creative aspect is one side. And then actually running the ads on Facebook, if you don't get banned, is like, all right, there's a lot going on there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you never got into that before you did high ticket? You just went straight into high ticket as like, that's like the first.
Yeah, like seriously.
Money. You ever
for the digital marketing program that I went through, they kind of like put you through projects, or they wanted you to put like go do your own project or like something like that. So I was just kind of in the background messing around with Shopify. So kind of had some experience. I threw up an AliExpress product just so I could have something to advertise on like Google and Facebook. I just wanted to get on the platforms and like start learning, even though it was like I wasn't like serious. I was still on there like doing something. So, I mean, that certainly helped, but I mean, I would never make money with that.
What were like the projects they wanted you to do?
So there was multiple, I mean, there was like units that you would go through. There's like web analytics, there's SEO, there's like content marketing, email marketing. There's just like extremely in-depth like units and modules about all this different parts of digital marketing. So for each one, they would have you do like some type of project. They would give you like instructions or whatever. And for the whole thing, they were like kind of insisting that you have a website to do it all with. So real quick, I just started getting onto Shopify, made this like website with some AliExpress products on it. And then when it came to all the modules where I was like advertising and writing content, I had something at least to use, even though it wasn't like real. I wasn't trying to make money really, but I was just getting that experience on the platforms.
Interesting. I mean, it is, yeah, I think, pretty impressive that, you know, this is your first year into making money online. Mm-hmm. We talk about sometimes there's like a year of failure almost that I think most people have to go through in order for them to achieve long-term success with online business, because there's so many unknowns, and it could take a year to really go through those directly, have that direct experience and be confronted by, okay, I screwed this up because I didn't know about this and this and this. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, it's like we went through a lot of different failures before, you know, getting to this and making this work.
So yeah,
it's good on you. But also, sure, I think you kind of came into the right business model. I think the high ticket dropshipping is in and of itself very has a high success rate versus, you know, having a consulting business or any other stupid thing.
Yeah, I was like dead set on either getting a job or starting an agency for the digital marketing skills that I had developed or learned about, at least. That did not pan out.
Well, glad you're here.
Oh, yeah, me too, man.
Sam said, do you include calculation of taxes when you calculate your profit?
No, I mean, that's kind of one thing I have not experienced yet is the taxes and accounting of all this stuff. It's very confusing, I won't lie, but you know, that's something I will be figuring out pretty soon here before the year ends.
My country is 22% of your total. Well, that seems a bit low.
I mean, there's really no scenario in where you calculate the taxes as part of your profit.
Yeah,
right. You're getting taxed on any income you make. So, I mean, that's kind of like after you make any money, you get taxed on it.
Right. Yeah, you could make $100,000 on your dropshipping store as profit, and then if you go and you buy something like buy another asset, then you may potentially not pay taxes because you made $0.
Right.
Depending on what it is, I mean, that's kind of what Amazon does all the time.
Right.
Is for different.
Different things into R&D, right?
Go on. They invest in like machinery, R&D, advertising. So, yeah, I mean, it really all depends.
Yeah.
People say, oh, Amazon pays no taxes. I mean, yeah, they're just reading the tax code, I guess, and just, you know, doing different things to not pay taxes. But that comes with its own pros and cons, right? If you're just reinvesting so you don't pay taxes, again, a downturn can hit and you have no, you know, what does Dave Ramsey call it?
I don't know what he calls it. Lifeboat?
No, like a reserve fund. You need that.
An emergency fund.
The emergency fund.
Oh, man.
You need an emergency fund. So, you know, it's different ways to play the game, right? And yeah, you got to balance that. You don't want to just save everything and never scale. And you also just don't want to reinvest everything. So, it's I think, you know, it's best to reinvest into something that you've already proven you can have success with, right? So like, mm-hmm. if I had to spend $50,000 to go down on my tax bill or something, maybe I'd buy another dropshipping store because I know I could, you know, make a good dropshipping store. I could turn one around, etc. So
is that a real thing? You could do that?
Buy
an asset or buy another site and like use it as for it, the business you already have?
Well, it depends what, I mean, you got to ask your accountant about that, but it depends
right. What
you're doing it as. Like, you know, if you're buying a site as, I think it could technically be advertising, but it would depend on, you know, how it would work. You might be able to argue if you say you were in like the sewing industry and you bought another sewing site and you're funneling all the traffic to,
right.
I think you could argue that counts as advertising, but yeah, it really, really depends. But I would not ask me about that.
Yeah.
So, I mean, yeah, even if you had the sewing dropshipping site and you bought a sewing blog site, yeah,
that's what I meant.
Oh, I think I meant buy another sewing dropshipping site.
No. I meant buy like a sewing site where, you know, you're funneling you're using it as advertising for your other business.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that makes perfect sense to me. I'm just, you know, not the government.
Yeah. Confirm with your CPA before you
do
that. But yeah, that's just like something you can do. So yeah, I mean, coming up on 59 minutes, got any final questions, comments, criticisms, Matt?
I mean, I don't know. I mean, I'm just thankful. If anything, I'm very thankful for you guys, for your course, the good content, the community. Everything has been great. So, I mean, it's been a huge help.
Thank you, man. You like the community? What goes on?
I'm very, very involved. I mean, if there's nothing else,
you are involved in the community.
I'm in there chatting, doing something. But, I mean, it's cool because now that I know some things, I feel like I can help the people that don't. So that's kind of an advantage. That's cool. Like the fact that I know enough to help someone else is cool.
Yeah. And that's one thing, you know, you're very active in the community, but you also take time to actually implement things versus someone that could be active in a community, but they're just in the community, like digging around.
Yeah. The last community I came from was just a bunch of, you know, what's just, there's some idiots in there for sure.
So, you know, good on you. So anything else you got to say, Joe?
That's about it for me.
All right. Well, thank you, Matt, for coming aboard.
For sure.
Thank you guys for listening in. And if you have not yet, go to buildassetsonline.com/class, free web class, see our products, see how we do things, create $1 million in online assets. And until next time, guys,
take it easy.